if I ask the generation behind me, all the 20, 25-year-olds, you know, what was Jack Dempsey's record? Who's Joe Louis? Who was Bob Fitzsimmons? They have no idea who these guys were. Dying. These old school guys are dying. So I feel like the more I talk about them, you know, and if I mention them in articles and I mention them in interviews, it's almost like I'm summoning their energy back because I'm keeping them alive.
I'm a champion, I can never stop. If you put me in the square, I square up like a box. Good people, bad intentions, the tail of the tape. See the passion in my eyes, the real ones can relate. I said, I'm a champion, I can never stop. If you put me in the square, I square up like a box. Good people, bad intentions, the tail of the tape. See the passion in my eyes, the real ones can relate.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to episode 39 of the Good People, Bad Intentions podcast. And today, as our guest, I have Ryan Rizicki. Before I get into that, I just want to say to everybody, thank you so much for tuning in. I know it's been 5 months since I last put anything out on the podcast. And in those 5 months, I was focusing on school. If you didn't know, I'm in my first year of a two-year program called the Radio Television Journalism Program at the NSCC Ivany campus. And what I'm doing there is to try to become a journalist and do something like this full-time. So really appreciate everybody that's coming back. If you guys missed the podcast, tell me in the comments below. But today we have Ryan Rizicki. He's currently ranked number 6 in the cruiserweight division. And he's going to be fighting June 10th against Jean-Jacques Olivier. And they're going to be fighting for the WBC silver cruiserweight title. And the idea is that the winner likely will be fighting against Badu Jack for the international title. And of course, Ryan, he had fought in 2021 against Oscar Rivas for the inaugural Bridgerweight title. And then also the last year, so 2022, he also fought against Yamil Peralta from Argentina. And he had won that by decision. It was a controversial decision, and that was for the WBC International Cruiser title. And so that decision actually had got reversed. So Ryan's been picking up fights ever since then, and he's been looking great. He's won his last two fights by KO. And this June 10th fight, he's going up against a European champion. And Jean-Jacques, as far as my assessment, very high volume, close range, worker kind of fighter. And he's gone through a lot. He's from my understanding, he was shot in the past. I think it was in 2019, so roughly 4 years ago. He's had a life or death situation in his life. So I think when he's going up against Ryan, I mean, they're both going to have a very strong mentality and an ability to go deep in the fight. So it's hard to know what the fight's going to be like, but I'm really looking forward to it. And of course, this card that Three Lions Promotions is going to be having in Halifax. Without further ado, we got Cape Breton's own Ryan Rizicki. Hey, Ryan, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. I really appreciate you coming on.
Yeah, no problem, man. I'm glad to be on. Anybody who's involved in boxing from Nova Scotia, you know, I support. So anyone's involved with boxing from anywhere, but especially the Maritimes, you know. Yeah.
And I think one of the first times I saw you was at the St. Valentine's Day Massacre card. I was cornering a guy there, and I got to meet you. Of course, the fight was at Center 200, and this was like a month before the pandemic had hit us all. And it was a great time. You had the Highland Dancers coming. You had this great entrance. Can you just go back to that? What was that event like for you?
Yeah, that was a big one. I remember that one. You know, it was just, for me, like, fighting in Cape Breton is different. Like, that fight, even the last fight in Cape Breton, the fight I had against Peralta, Sean Miller, they were all just really exciting moments in my career. Pretty equal, each one, yeah.
I had saw you, well, not saw you, but when I was doing an interview with Brandon Brewer about a year or so ago, You were in the background. That was right after he opened up the coach lab and was doing his own gym in New Brunswick. And I had made some mention to you. I said hello and everything like that. And I've seen you since around.
Yeah.
And just really want to congratulate you on, you know, your career and how it's been going so far. I know you had fought against Oscar Rivas for the inaugural Bridgerweight title. You know, you had the fight with Peralta for the Cruiserweight WBC title. And what's it been like now finally getting to that point in your career where you're getting the big fights and your every fight you're in title contention basically?
Yeah, it's like it came quicker than I expected, to be honest. But, well, if I'm being completely honest, like, you know, you could even talk to my coach about this because we had a conversation yesterday, and it's funny. So my fight June 10th is for the interim or silver, whatever you want to call it, WBC belt, which will put me mandatory position to fight Badu Jack. So, like, big things are happening, and, like, honestly, you could ask Brandon the same thing when I turned professional, because Brandon turned me pro, right? I fought on his undercard in Fredericton. That was my pro debut. And I fought to make $500. And I used to tell people, like, I'll probably retire with, like, a losing record, because I had a losing record in the amateurs. I had no aspirations of being, like, anywhere near top 10. Like, I didn't think I would be a top 100 fighter, to be honest with you, let alone, like, a world title contender. So, you know, the fact that I'm even here and I'm in there in the mix with the best in the world, it still doesn't really set in. I just kind of see fights as fights, you know, get in, get paid, make my money and have good fights. But it is pretty exciting though to be in the mix now.
I had watched a 2017 interview you had done with CTV Atlantic, and you had mentioned in that interview about maybe some doubters that you had earlier on in your career and your amateur career. You don't have to, like, necessarily name anybody, but was that kind of the source of maybe some of the doubt into your career early on and not really seeing it amount to much? Or where did you get that from, you think?
I would say it's probably just the way that I grew up, where I grew up. Like, we didn't have, there was no professional boxers in my area. There was none for, I think it was at least, I could be wrong, but we're talking like 30, 40 years before me, the last professional boxer in Cape Breton. Because Cape Breton is kind of a world of its own. Like, it's the island off Nova Scotia. Like, Cape Bretoners don't even really consider themselves part of Nova Scotia. They call them the mainlanders. They think they're their own world. So, you know, and I grew up in that area, and that was my mindset too. So just being surrounded by people, you know, when I said, you know, I'm going to be a professional fighter, this is what I want to do, they would just be like, oh, what are you doing? You're going to get hurt and this and that. And so there was never any thought in my mind about how far I could actually go with it. It was just more of like, I just loved to fight and I wanted to just do it full time, you know?
I'm from Yarmouth, the other end. I don't know which end has it tougher, but I know that, like, in both areas, you know, fishing and other, you know, physical labor jobs are, like, a huge part of our economy and everything. Have you been, throughout your whole career, been able to connect with kind of your people and where you're from and allow that to give you strength in the ring?
Yeah, 100%. I always, you know, I've always walked out with the Cape Breton flag behind me or in front of me. I've always, you know, represented them because the type of people I grew up around, like my family, my family friends, they've all, like, they're the hardest workers you could imagine. Like, and I'm not knocking anybody here in Ontario. Everybody's doing their thing, but this is nothing. Like, these people wouldn't last a fucking day in Cape Breton, I swear to God. Like, it's just the way we grew up. Like, you're 11 years old. You gotta go haul hardwood in minus 30 weather. You forgot your gloves. Too bad. The trailer's still got to be loaded. Like, this is the way it was. You break your finger or something working, or you get a cut. Well, you deal with it when the job is done. You know, this is the way it was. So it's like, and I was raised in that kind of environment. So I always, like, when I carry that flag, that's what I'm representing. And, like, you know, things change as generations go by. So Am I representing today's generation of Cape Bretoners? The ones who are like softer than Pop-Tarts? No, I'm not representing them. I'm representing the old Maritimers who grew up in that tough mindset, those tough people that worked for everything that they have. You know, those are the people, those are who I'm representing when I raise that flag. I'm not representing my little haters who are talking shit behind a computer. So it is what it is.
One thing I've always loved throughout your career is you make really great posts on social media. I know that that's not necessarily what you do as a professional, but I know that you understand the part of social media and how it plays into the fight game nowadays. And one thing I always appreciated watching was how you make these posts. You'd be working these night shifts, and then you'd be going to the gym or you'd be training and working. Can you kind of talk about what it was like when you were working these long hour days and then going and training too?
Yeah, there was a time, like, honestly, for the past couple of years, it's just been, I've been lucky enough where I could get a couple sponsors and stuff so I could actually box full time. But there was times, like, even in my pro career, where I'd be working as a bouncer, working a door. So I'd be working from, like, but besides that, I would also be doing physical labor. I'd be doing roofing. I'd be cutting wood, working in the woods, cutting pulp, cutting hardwood, doing just about anything I could do. So my, you know, like, let's say if I'm in the working roofing all day, I would do that. That would be my conditioning. And then I would go and I would work the door at a bar from, let's say, 10 p.m. till 2 o'clock in the morning. And then at, you know, 2 o'clock comes through, 2:30 or so, I would leave there and I would go down to the north end of the boxing gym because I had a key for the boxing club. And I would go in and I would train till like 5 o'clock in the morning, you know. And then I would go home. I would sleep for like 2 hours. I'd get up and then I would go do roofing for the day. Like, this is – and then I would fight. Like, and then I would go and I'd fight. Like, I literally would do that for my first – like 7 or 8 pro fights. That's how I got by. And then, like I said, it wasn't until fairly recently that I was able to just train full time, only train. And you're seeing the improvements in the ring as well. Like, now that I'm actually able to box full time, you know.
When you're doing those jobs where you're kind of, you know, physical labor, or, you know, I work kind of security, so I understand kind of the role of a bouncer. Are you visualizing your fights while you're doing these other tasks, or how much does the fight take a part of your everyday life when you're thinking about it?
No, so when I was like, you know, 20, my early 20s, like, I would literally, so I'd be working a door and I look around, and if everything looks good and you know, there's nobody's acting up or anything, I go in the bathroom, like, act as if I'm going in the bathroom, and I'd be in the mirror shadow boxing for like 20 minutes. Another bouncer would come in, like, what are you doing, Ryan? Like, man, I got a fight coming up. I gotta work on some things here. Or I remember I used to, like, I'd put my back up against the wall. Like, and this is what I do even when I used to work security and bouncing and all this stuff. No matter what I was doing, everything was boxing intention. So, like, I would have my back up against the wall. I would pivot off the wall, throw a left hook, like, all night, all shift. This is over and over. Or if I was, like, working in the woods, I remember, like, I would purposely, like, park the trailer 25, 30 yards from the tree, and I would pick up each log and I would throw it as if I was throwing a punch. That's the way I would throw the log. Like, everything was just training. Everything I did was training for a fight.
Wow. I can imagine the situation, you know, socially, when you get a bouncer that's like, no, what's going on there?
Yeah.
Ryan in the bathroom. But no, I get what you're saying. You got to find that time, right, for you to practice, and with that kind of schedule, I mean, it can be any time. But I'm just wondering, because, you know, I've seen stuff where you had talked about the days where you were training in I believe a barn,
yeah,
by yourself all day. What was kind of the source of inspiration? I think a lot of people understand the story about how you had had some trouble growing up, and you had the decision of, you wanted to be a hockey player, but then your father, I think, wanted you to get into boxing. I think everybody knows that story by now. But I'm just curious, like, what really got you into that next level with boxing and starting to really obsess about it?
That story with the whole the court thing. And then, like I said, yeah, it was one of my conditions was to join a sport. The judge was like, he was, I think it was my third charge in like 3 months during when I was 15. I was just fighting like nonstop. And I mean, I fighting every single day I was in a fight. So I was obsessed with fighting before I was obsessed with boxing. It wasn't because I didn't really know what boxing was. Like, obviously I've heard of Mike Tyson and stuff, but I couldn't tell you like anything about anybody. And then, so once I actually went to a boxing gym for the first time, like my dad said, I want you to try this out. Went to the boxing club and it killed me. I remember I did the workout and it was just, I didn't spar now that I just did the heavy bags, the skipping and everything. And like, I remember like throwing up as I'm leaving and like, I thought I was going to die and all this stuff. And I was like, I'm never doing that again. No way. And then I went home and I went on YouTube. I think it was YouTube, but I don't even really remember. We had like a computer. Like, remember the big screen? So I went in there and I just Googled boxing. I go on Google and I Google boxing because I just wanted to know a little bit more about it. And I'm like scrolling through videos and I still have this memory of like Mike Tyson highlights. And I'm like, nah. I keep going, scrolling. It's like Mayweather, nah. Muhammad Ali, nah. And then I saw this black and white film and it was Jack Dempsey versus Jess Willard. And I'm like, yeah, I want to click this one. Because it was like, it's just intriguing because it was black and white. It's like, well, that's pretty cool. So I clicked it, and I remember when the fight started, and like Jack Dempsey's like, he's like assaulting Jess Willard in the ring. It's not even a boxing match. He's just straight up like, it's a violent assault, you know. And I saw that, and I was just like mesmerized. I'll never forget it. And I was like, okay, I want to be that guy. Like, I want to be that guy. And I could hear like the way that the commentators were saying, you know, down goes Willard and whatever, and like, I was just obsessed with it from that moment. And yeah, just spiraled from there. I just started watching him every day. Like, every time I got on the computer, Jack Dempsey. Like, I know everybody else at my age, 15 at that time, they were probably looking at some different stuff on the computer. Jack Dempsey. Jack Dempsey versus Jess Willard. Jack Dempsey versus Gene Tunney versus Firpo versus all these guys. I was watching these fights over and over, you know? And I didn't even really get into, like, know much about his actual life until later. I was just obsessed with actually watching the fights. It's like, I didn't really care about who he was or anything until like later. I was like, it was his style and what he did to the people in the ring. That was what made me obsessed with, you know, this guy.
I seen a really beautiful post that you made not too long ago regarding Jack Dempsey, July 4th, 1919. And it was talking about, you know, how boxing was a gentleman's sport before that fight with Willard.
Yeah.
And, you know, you make mention about how you thought Mike Tyson was kind of the last of the type or the animal, but that you're wanting to be the next one.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you think, like, what do you think makes these types of fighters? Do you think, like, have you tried to look at kind of the similarities between all these different types of fighters?
I did, and you know what, it's the way that they come up. It's where they come from. It's like there's different, like, I think there's different traits that they have, different like maybe mental things going on with each fighter, but it definitely, they're products of their environment. Like that's how they're created. Like, you can't take a guy like Ryan Garcia. You can't take a guy like, and this is a hard man who can fight, and he's a violent dude, is Gervonta Davis, for example. But Gervonta Davis was gifted into the limelight. Yes, he worked for it. Yes, he came from tough places. But he got blessed when he ran into Mayweather early in his career. Jack Dempsey didn't get blessed by nothing or nobody. You know what I mean? Sonny Liston didn't get blessed by nothing or nobody. These guys, like, they had no choice but to fight their way into that limelight. Even Mike Tyson, like, he got a little blessed early in his career. And again, I'm not, if you know your boxing, you know this is, a lot of people don't want to hear this, but as much of a killer as Mike Tyson was, he wasn't like Jack Dempsey. He says he was, like, there's interviews where he's like, I'm cut from the same cloth as Dempsey and Liston. But he's not. He says he is, but he's not, because after four or five rounds, if the guy showed some durability, what happened to Tyson in those fights? Look at the fights with Jack Dempsey when he got smashed out of the ring by Firpo. You know, he has his jaw broken in fights. What does he do? He finds a way to still win these fights. Where, like, Mike Tyson found out there was a bit of adversity, you know. He bite a guy's ear to find a way out. Like, that's, like, these guys were real killers back then. So Mike Tyson was the last one, but he was only a fraction of what they were. And he knows that. If I ever get a chance to talk to him, he's going to admit it. I know it, because he knows that it's true. There'll never be another, like, Jack Dempsey. There'll never be another Liston. There'll never be another John L. Sullivan, these type of guys.
Yeah, one thing I appreciated from Dempsey, and you might be able to correct me, because I think you honestly are, you know, one of the most well-read and well-watched of Dempsey. But if I'm not mistaken, wasn't he, like, traveling from city to city or from place to place on the train, like hitching, you know, like going underneath trains and everything like that to get to fights?
Yeah, he would tie his arms and legs underneath the train. Like, he would hook on, tie himself there so he wouldn't fall. And then when the train stopped, he would get himself off and he would go in. And he used John L. Sullivan's famous line. He would go into, like, a local bar or whatever, and he would tell the bouncers, I'll beat any man. And he said, I'll lick any son of a bitch in the house. That's what he would say. But Dempsey copied John L. Sullivan. So Dempsey's mother, when Dempsey was first born, he was just a baby, his mother found a magazine or something, or a write-up of John L. Sullivan. And she said, I want my son to be like him. So when Jack Dempsey was coming up and he was being raised, his hero was John L. Sullivan, just like Dempsey is to me. John L. Sullivan was to Dempsey, you know?
So in a way, is it almost like... you know, he was created by his mother, as far as, like, that obsession and that was kind of instilled in him.
Yeah, she wanted him to be the next John L. Sullivan. Okay. And he was. Yeah.
Now, I've seen video, and I'm just curious for my own sake, but, like, I've seen video where you're kind of starting your day, you know, watching Jack Dempsey before you start, and I'm just curious, like, I've seen you say about wanting to fight him, and maybe he would beat you or whatnot. But if you could actually talk with Jack Dempsey today, like, what kind of conversation do you think you would have?
I think we'd have to fight first, and then we would talk after.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't think there would be any talking. It would have to be a fight, because it would be something like you can't talk about with words. You'd have to talk about it with our fists. We'd have to see who can outlast who's actually got more in the tank. More heart, more power. We're going to find out, and then we're going to talk about it after, you know. But if I could sit down and talk to him, I don't think I would talk too much.
No,
I would just listen.
Okay.
Yeah.
Have you been to his, I think he's got, like, a bar, right?
He had a restaurant.
A restaurant?
It was in the Rocky Balboa movie. Rocky Balboa, actually, he's wearing the Dempsey shirt in that movie, and he's outside. That's the restaurant. It's based off of Dempsey. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, no, I've never been, but so I plan on, before I get another world title shot, and I've already spoken to my promoters, I won't get in the ring for a world title until I visit his grave.
Okay. It's an interesting condition to have.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hopefully, you got to be respectful at the grave, I hope.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, it'd probably be a moment, like, it'd be something weird's going to happen. I don't know. It's like...
Yeah.
I know, like, some spiritual shit's gonna happen when I get there, because, like, the more that I bring up these old school fighters, like, you can even watch my fights. Like, for example, my last fight, I was in a mindset where I felt like physically I wasn't right. I wasn't right physically. I had a bad camp, and I needed to find another way. I needed to find another way to beat this man before, because I just knew, like, I was physically going to be at a disadvantage. So I started watching so much Sonny Liston, and I started watching the way he looked at guys, the way he was when he was with a guy, like, he was gonna fight, the weigh-ins and everything else. I studied what he would do to intimidate them, because intimidation is huge in boxing, right? And I kept mentioning Sonny Liston, and then It's almost like an energy thing. Like when the weigh-ins came and I looked at this guy, Gorlov, like, I'm just going to look at him with the same stare that Sonny Liston stared at Floyd Patterson, and he broke him. Like, Floyd Patterson was a hell of a fighter, but Liston smashed him in the first round, I think it was, because he just had him mentally beaten before the fight even started. So Mike Tyson copied Liston with that, right? And, I knew I broke this guy before the fight even started, just by the way I was looking at him, and I knew, like, I had Sonny Liston's energy was there, you know? So there's something, like, spiritual going on with these old-school fighters, and, like, I believe nobody today, like, for example, when Floyd fights, or when, was retired now, but when he was fighting, like, he's the biggest, all eyes are on him, the whole world's on him. Or, like, when Tank and Garcia just fought, the whole world is watching them, right? Like, they're not meant, nobody's talking about the former champions. No one's respecting what they did, and keeping their energy going, keeping it alive. Like, and as the generations go by, and, you know, we're all on this technology and everything else, like, we're, people are forgetting. Like, you, if I ask the generation behind me, all the 20, 25-year-olds, you know, what was Jack Dempsey's record? Who's Joe Louis? Who was Bob Fitzsimmons? Like, they have no idea who these guys were, you know? So it's like, it's dying. These old school guys are dying. So I feel like the more I talk about them, you know, and if I mention them in articles and I mention them in interviews, it's almost like I'm summoning their energy back because I'm keeping them alive.
And speaking about energy, and this is something that I would be interested to have more discussion about, is talking about the bruiser energy.
Yeah.
Now, I've heard that kind of started when you fought against Khitag Pilev, the Dagestani.
Well, it started long before boxing. That was something that was, okay. That was, that's that thing that I have that just like a lot of these other fighters have. It's a, you know, you got your first gear, your second gear, your third gear. You got your conditioning you can fall back on, your skill you can fall back on. But I have something that goes beyond that. It's like, it's almost like a calm, composed rage that never dies out. Like, you know, when fighters get mad in the ring or they get emotional, they fatigue quicker. Like, it's, everybody knows, and if you know anything about boxing, you know, you don't go in the ring with emotions, because that's a recipe for disaster. If you start getting emotional in front of a fighter, he's going to capitalize on your mistakes. But every so often you will run across a fighter who emotions actually fuel them. Like, it's almost like an extra gear. It's like you're literally, it's crazy. So, you know, it's like I got this rage that I developed through, you know, my life, through street fights, through, like, you know, troubles with the law. Like I said, like, all kinds of this crazy, crazy violence. So I hold in a lot of this rage. And when I let it out in the ring, like, it's just a different gear. And it's like, that's what, so the bruiser, that's what I refer to that as. It's just like an alter, it's like an alter ego, but I'm kind of in control of the alter ego kind of thing.
So, I'm always curious, because I know you're popular and whatnot. Have you ever talked with, like, any sports psychologists or anybody that's in the game regarding your mentality, and maybe had any thoughts? Have they had any thoughts about this state that you go into when you're fighting? Or
no, if I talk to somebody like that, they'd probably lock me up.
No, okay. No, because
no, it's something like, it's very, very hard to describe with words. Like, you would, yeah, almost be better off asking my coach about it, because he has a more better understanding. Like, for example, the Pliev fight was the first time he saw it in the ring. It's not the first time it's come out in the ring. I've had amateur fights where it happened too, but that was the first time, like, I was under the lights as a pro where people got to see it. And he had never seen it, like, through sparring, because when I spar, it's just training to me. I'm not getting like that. But in that fight, it's like when I get put in a situation where, you know, there's no other way out. Like, this guy had my eye socket broke. The doctor was going to stop the fight. The doctor, I had 2 minutes before the doctor was going to stop that fight. And it was just, boom, it happened. Like, and it's not like I tried to, like, force it out. It just happens on its own. And I don't remember that fight. Like, as soon as it happens and it comes on, I'm out. Like, I don't know. I don't even know what's going on. Maybe I was buzzed from his power. I'm not sure. But when I started coming back around, like Stevie had his, you can see in the video that fight, Stevie had his two hands on my, he already jumped in the ring because he knew something was going on. And he'll tell you, like, when he looked in my eyes, there, I was gone. I was not me. Like, he says, like, it took him to, like, he's like, just breathe. And I'm like, you know, I was somebody else at that point.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen the stare downs in person. I saw the one at St. Valentine's Day Massacre. And they're very intense. And I guess you'd be like the main deterrent or determiner of whether or not one is the bruiser or one's not. So is it kind of more of like a rare instance? It only happens in certain fights? Or do you feel like it's every fight at certain extent?
Yeah, like it's almost like it's there when I need it, you know. But I am very calm. Like those stare downs, like that's, I'm all there. I'm okay. I'm aware of what's happening in the fights. I'm aware of what's happening. It's just like when my back is put up against the wall, that's when boom. Like in the Rivas fight, like when I got cracked, I almost got knocked out in that first round. Like the round was over, but something brings me right back. Like it's like, because I was like, as I'm walking to the corner, I'm back and I'm mad. Like, you know, but. It's weird. It's something that's, I try to explain it best I can, but like I said, like my coach could tell you when he got in the ring after that Pliev fight, he says, he's like, I don't know how to explain it. He can't, he tries to explain it, but he's like, it wasn't you. Your eyes were gone.
One thing I appreciate, from everything I've gathered is you really understand where your opponents are coming from. Cause I know with that particular fight, I knew that there was some interviews talking about and early on that you had some doubt where it was like, you know, I don't know, this guy must've gone through a lot. He's from Dagestan. It's a very, you know, tough area. And so do you try and when you go to fights, you're trying to understand your opponent's mentality and where they're coming from and where their strength is from and that sort of thing?
Yeah, I do a little bit. Like for that fight, it was, that's how it was. And then like, for example, this fight coming up, I know that this guy has been shot in the chest and had like a close encounter with death. So I'm expecting a man to come who's not, not that he's not afraid, but he knows he knows what it's like to be in a life or death situation. So like me, I'm training right now to put him there. I'm training to bring him back to them places. Like, you know, that's my mentality going into this fight, is I'm going to make him not only think, but let him know, like, this is where you're going to go tonight, you know? And then as the fight goes on, you know, that's where it's going to go. But I know that he's been there, and I know that, you know, like, I'll take that and use it.
I watched some tape of your opponent, and my assessment is that, you know, he's very, very close and fights close.
Yeah.
He's a worker, volume puncher. What's your assessment so far as you know what he can bring to the ring?
I think you said he's he seems to be more of an inside fighter. He does throw a lot of punches. I think he throws a lot of hard punches. He's got a serious output, really good conditioning. And by the look of it, he's really durable too. So like, I'm expecting a real, real tough fight. Like, you know, it's a fight. At the end of the day, it's a fight. Like, anything can happen. I could have a terrible night. He could have a great night. I could have a great night. He could have a terrible night. We both could have terrible nights. You know, or we both could have a great night and then you have a great fight.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to the fight, and I'm glad that you touched on kind of, because I looked into your opponent and I had seen that he had the whole story, and that's kind of where he's coming from when he's doing interviews right now, is talking about that. And you know, and I think did you know he's a rapper as well?
Like what do you, like rap and what?
I think he does rap.
Like music rap?
Yeah.
I thought you meant like rapping, like wrapping up boxes.
No,
I didn't know that.
Yeah. I saw some. He's from a French island called Martinique, and it looks like he's done some rapping as well. I was like, rap. So he's a creative guy, you know? He's So that's interesting that your assessment is that way, because yeah, like I brought that up. I was gonna bring that up, that he went through that experience, and that, you know, he's probably not scared to go whatever depth it will be. And
there's, yeah, but see, there's two ways that can go. Like, you have a close call with death like that, you can either be so intrigued that you want to have that close call again. Like, it can go one way or the other. Or you can be absolutely so grateful for life that you made it out alive that you want never, ever to experience anything like that again. So when I'm in front of him and I'm not going anywhere and the fight's getting tough and it's getting dark and I'm hitting him with every shot I hit him with is going to feel like I broke his bones. Like, I know how hard I punch. I hit him in the body, he's going to feel like his organs are getting pierced with bullets again, you know, and we'll see where his mind, we'll see how bad he really wants it. Like, I'll say that much. Of course, he can knock me out with one punch. Anything can happen. But, like, you know, he experienced what it's like to come close to death, and, like, without trying to sound too arrogant, I can guarantee that he's probably going to experience something similar to that again when we fight. You know, and it's, maybe I'll experience the same thing. I just know where I take these guys. Like Rivas, for example, he won the fight 12 rounds. He never fought again. And there's a reason why he never fought again. Because of the places that we went. Like, they were familiar places for me. And I liked those places because I've been there before outside of the ring. So I know what it's like to go there when you're knocking on death's door. But he, I don't think he was ever there before. And when he got to there, he didn't like it. And he's never going to box again because he doesn't ever want to experience anything like that again. That's why he retired. They can say it was an eye injury from the fight. They could say this and that. But I seen the look in that man's eyes after the 12th round was over. And it was the same look that you see in somebody's eyes if a bus just missed them. You know what I mean? It's like, wow, I made it. I made it. And then he never fought again. So he gave up a belt. He gave up a world title belt after that. You know, and like, Rivas will forever be one of my favorite fighters. I'll always have so much respect for him. But like, the truth is that I broke him that night. You know?
Was that your Rocky moment?
I think so. I think it was. I think it was the first Rocky moment. But there's got to be a two. There's got to be a three. There's got to be a four. Yeah. You know? I'm looking at the big picture. That was just the introduction to this film.
Yeah. I wanted to have a discussion about films. Are you a fan of, like, not even just boxing films, but just, like, films in general?
Yeah, I do. I do. I like films. I do.
Okay. Somebody that doesn't go away that I've seen you rocking lately, Mike Myers, Halloween.
Yeah.
I just think it's very fitting with everything and et cetera, but kind of what made you, or like, are you always a fan of Halloween and Michael Myers?
Yeah. The first one I watched was the Rob Zombie one, the second one,
yep.
Halloween 2. I think it was I can't remember the exact year that he made that one, but that was the first one.
Came out in 2007, I think, with Rob Zombie. And then I can't remember what the second one came out.
Second one. So yeah, that was the first one I saw. Like, and I remember the scene when he's actually the one that I loved. So he's at a strip club.
Yep.
And he kills a couple of people in there, and then he comes outside. Or no, he comes outside maybe first. And there's a guy out there who's like, I don't know if he's a bouncer or what, but he thinks he's a tough guy. And he's like melting off to Michael Myers, and he's just staring at him. He doesn't have a mask on. He's got his hood up, and he's just staring at him. And the guy's telling him, you know, you better go, blah, blah, blah. And the guy punches Myers in the face, and it's just like, bing, and he's like this, and then he choke slams him, stomps his head flat. And I saw that, and it was just like, damn, like, I don't know, I like this guy.
Yeah, because it seemed like fitting, because he's a guy that doesn't go away, and that's something I can say with all your fights, is you don't go away.
No, I'm there. Like, you got to literally, like, I have something I can't explain where they have to shut my lights off to stop me from coming. It doesn't matter what kind of pain I go through. Like, I've been hit with those left hooks to the body. And you can watch that Rivas fight, and that guy's got 40 pounds on me. The punches he was hitting me with to the body, like, I was hospitalized after that fight with, I had kidney failure. Like, I had severe dehydration. My brain was swollen. Like, I was literally on my next to death after that fight. But I would have gone 10 more rounds. I would have kept going until my body actually, like, died, you know? So, like, they have to actually kill me to stop me or knock me out. One of the two.
Do you think that moment, like, do you think there will be a moment where there is that knockout on the record? Or do you think you're going to, it's just always, it just, if anything, it would be a loss?
No, I'll get knocked out eventually. Like, I've been knocked out on my feet. I've been rocked with shots. So I know, like, I do have a crazy chin. Like, I know, like, my ability to absorb shots is ridiculous. But that being said, I'm a human. And we all have a button, you know? And anybody can be knocked out. Jack Dempsey was knocked out in the first round against Fireman Jim Flynn early in his career, if you look it up. Joe Lewis been knocked out. Like, John L. Sullivan been knocked out. You know, all these greats, even the most violent killers of boxing, they were all knocked out at some point, one time or another. So, like, I'm sure I'll get mine, too. Sonny Liston was knocked out a bunch of times. Like, it's... I don't care about getting, if I ever get knocked out. It's like, to me, that there, now I just got my chance to prove that I can come back after it. You know, mm-hmm. I'd be looking forward to how I come back after a knockout.
I think if I'm understanding anything about everything that I know so far about you, coming back is like a huge part of like who you are, right? Because, you know, you've had some things when you're earlier on that you had to deal with. And then boxing was kind of like your comeback, right?
Yeah.
To that. And then even with your amateur career not going maybe the way that you had wanted, when you had your pro career, I mean, it was like night and day, right? With everything. So, like, is that like a huge, like, does that come from anywhere? Is like just that wanting to prove people wrong and come back and. From anything?
I think it's more proof to myself than to prove to people. Of course, I'm in the limelight a little bit with boxing, so proving things to people is always going to be a part of it because the people are, you know, it's important to people like yourself. We do the podcast, that people buy tickets to the fights, you know, all these people in boxing. So there's always going to be something to prove to people, but that's not my first thought that comes to mind. Like, my thing is, like, if it's just my character, if I have a bad night, I want to make it better. If I get knocked down, I want to get up. Like, I look more forward to, you're right. I look more forward to that seems to be like the comeback. I give my absolute best every time. And when it's not enough, I almost get pissed off and I'm like, okay, you mother, or like, now you got to prove to yourself that you can come out of it, you know? So yeah, it's more like a, just ego, proving it to myself that I can do it. But yeah, I think it's just a character trait that was developed through experiences in life, especially my younger life.
I wanted to take things on a shift for a moment, something a little bit lighthearted. I know this isn't GQ, but you know, you got a lot of tattoos, and I know, like, a lot of people, one of the first things they notice about you in the ring probably is all the tattoos that you got. And I know that, I think you've gone to like 24 different artists.
Something like that for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. What was your last tattoo that you had?
My last one was actually, I just got one here it's a tombstone.
Okay.
And it says the past on it. Like, the past is dead. So I'm kind of in a mindset right now where, not that I'll ever forget about some things, but I kind of wanted this one just as a reminder, like, things I've done in the past don't matter anymore. Like, I've done, like, I get that I'm a role model to some kids and stuff because I actually use boxing to steer me in a better direction in life. But there is things I've done, like, I've beaten people in street fights, like, terrible beatings, terrible things I've done that I got to live with, but, you know, it's gone. It's in the past. That's it. It's dead. It's gone. It don't exist anymore. The only time it exists is if I bring it up like this in a conversation. So, you know, other than that, it's just these things are history.
And Cape Breton, it's a very small town, just as much as Yarmouth is. When these things happen, and I know that there had been some charges previously, I know that it's different than if somebody's in Toronto or somebody's in New York. Like, nobody knows everybody, but everybody's talking and things. Like, can you kind of talk about the whole factor of, because there is some people that hate on you for things that have happened in the past. Do you got anything to say to those kind of people?
You know, like, they're hating on somebody that doesn't exist anymore. I get it. I've done the things. I've done these things to people. But, like, number one, I wasn't a bully. I never started a fight. Any of the things that had happened, they came to me. Was I obsessed with fighting? Yes. Could I have probably turned away and walked away? Sometimes I could have. But there was also times that I turned and tried to walk away and I got hit in the back of the head with a bottle. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, so a lot of the people who hate on me, they don't know. They don't know the situations. They don't know. Like, I'm in boxing now because, like I've said it before in posts, I'm doing something that I love to do, and I'm not getting in trouble for it. I'm not getting looked upon as a menace to society for it. You know, like, I can do this, and it actually inspires, like, young kids, because I know that, especially in the Maritimes and Cape Breton, Halifax, and, you know, New Brunswick, there's a lot of young guys who are walking the same shoes I walked, and they're going to end up in jail. They're going to end up killing somebody or getting killed, because tough guys usually do get killed. The tough guys usually get shot or they get stabbed because people eventually don't want to fight them anymore. They're like, let's just off this guy, you know? So, you know, like, the people who hate on me and stuff, I can see why they do. But at the same time, like, if not now, later, I can guarantee that they're going to respect me because of the change that I made, you know?
And your father now, can you talk a little bit about how that's either kept what you've been doing as far as boxing and everything, or maybe has changed your mentality, or
definitely more motivation? Like, when I think about my daughter, like, I think about someday she's going to see all these fights she's going to see. And, like, I just want to set an example, you know, when she's older, like, how hard work, where it can get you. Like, if anything, just, you know, just working hard and trying to find the positive no matter what. Maybe someday she might be a violent little bugger, you know, and maybe she'll find boxing, or it could be hockey, it could be rugby, it could be something, it could be painting, it could be anything, right? Like, whatever. But, like, she's got to go all in and forget about this other side. Because I know a lot of people have it, right? Other people, they might take medications for it. They might go talk to somebody, whatever. Everybody's got an outlet that they, you know. But, like, extreme people, like, that's the thing about me is, like, I'm a bit extreme with the tattoos. I go absolute. I don't just get one, you know. I go absolute whatever. Like, everything I do is I'm all in. So when I started, like, getting introduced to violence in my life and, like, you know, friggin' fighting and just all this kind of life, I went all in. That's what happened. And I went all in with it, and it led me into the troubles with the law and the bad reputation and the, like, I was headlines for bad things before I was headlines for good things, you know? And then I was headlines for bad things again and then good things again. But, like, it's because I'm all in. But right now, like, I'm in a place where I'm all in with boxing, and it's been like this for the last 3 years. And I just can't see it changing, you know? There's, like, somebody could come up to the side of this window right now and I'm just get lost. He can do whatever. I got a fight coming up, you know? Like, that's where my mind is right now. So it's a positive thing, in my opinion. So anybody who, like I said, who just hates on me and they want to talk and act like I'm still some menace to society, like, they're just losers. They're just losers, and they just can't, like, they can't believe that somebody can actually change and somebody can actually do something good with something that looks so terrible, you know?
What's been some of your keys to change? Who are some people? I know you look up to Jack Dempsey, but, like, who are some people in your life or that you know of that have been helping you through?
I had a lot of people that I respected that told me, like, from young, like, and it didn't really click in till later in life, if I'm 100% honest. Like, for example, I remember I'm like 15, 16 years old. This is when I'm first, like, I first learned that how hard I could hit. And when I learned how hard I could hit, like, it was game on in street fights, you know. Like, that's when I stopped trying to avoid situations. Instead, I would, if they came my way, I'm not letting it go now. Not that I'd go look for it, but if it came my way, I'm okay, now it's, you know, it is what it is. So I ended up hurting this guy really bad in a street fight. I, like, blinded him in one eye with a punch and broke his whole side of his skull. And it was a terrible thing, terrible thing, terrible situation. And I thought, I was proud of it at the time because I'm a kid and I'm like, oh, look what I, you know, bragging to your buddies are bragging to their buddies. Rizicky's this, Rizicky's that. And I thought it was the best thing ever. And I'll never forget, I'm sitting at home and so I got a couple uncles who were street fighters, and one particularly who was like, he was, to this day, he would still whoop my ass, to be honest with you. He's tough as they come. And I thought he was going to be proud of me. And he pulls in the driveway, and I'm thinking, oh, he's going to shake my hand and say, you know, you're this. But he came, he almost knocked me out. Like, he was like, what are you doing this? He's like, you can, you're in boxing, you can actually do something. Don't be like me, kind of thing, right? That was, but that, I was kind of mad at the time. I'm just a kid, and I didn't really understand what he meant. But now, looking at it now, today, it's like, whoa, that was one of those big moments for sure where, you know, that, he really put something in my head, like, this is not something to be proud of, like, going out there and doing this shit. Like, you see your, these guys, like even I've seen it where somebody will stab somebody and then they're running away high-fiving their buddies. It's like, what the fuck, you loser, you know? But yeah, it's just like, it's really clicking in now, to be honest, like, at this age in my life for sure. That's just one example, but there's a few other.
So do you feel like you're in a unique position because although you've changed, you can somehow understand maybe at-risk youth and maybe you have a role in the future where you can, you know, you can help people out that have been in the same shoes you've been in?
Yeah, definitely, because number one, I'm still in those shoes. I'm like, that's the honest truth, is I'm still doing, like, I'm still being me. Like, I'm still being that person, but I'm just doing it in a way that's, it's the right way. If there's a right way, it's boxing. If there's a right, it's MMA, it's jiu-jitsu, it's wrestling. Like, you, like, just because you're a violent person, it, to me, and it might sound crazy to some people, too bad, just because you're a violent person doesn't mean you're a bad person. You know, that's the thing. A bad person is somebody who goes out, messes with kids, somebody who goes out, you know, like really weirdos. To me, that's a bad person. Like, lock them up and burn them, do something with them, you know. But violent people who love to fight, they just love to fight. Sure, I love to get hit. I love to hit people, and I like to be in the war. And I like to shake hands after, you know? That's who I am. And, like, you know, it's just, like, there's a right way to do it and a wrong way to do it. And maybe I can just show people that this is how you do it the right way. You go into the professional sports.
I think you are on brand for what Good People, Bad Intentions has always been about. Which is, you know, even looking as far as back as Jack Dempsey and, you know, what he said in his fights and what he had done and everything. But, you know, at the end of the day, fighters who love to fight and who love it for the sport or competitiveness or to see, you know, use it as a vehicle to improve themselves, everything like that. At the end of the day, they shake each other's hand and, you know, it's all, the fight is beyond what normal people have is a fight. Like, some people have a fight in a non-boxing context or a non-MMA context, and it's like they'll never talk to that guy for 20 years.
Yeah.
And then in boxing, it's like the same night you shake his hand and meet their family.
Yeah, exactly. Like, there's a few fights. My last fight, a couple other fights where I was concerned that I, like, because I do, like, the truth is when I'm in the fight, when I'm leading up to the fight, my intentions are not good to what I want to do to this guy. To me, like, I put myself in a place where, you know, he's trying to take everything from me. So I'm going to take everything from him. That might be his life. That might be his health. That might be his career. Because he might take it all from me. And as evil as it sounds, it's true. You know? And like, that's where I'm at going into the fight. That's where I'm at during the fight. Like, when I hit a guy and I hurt him and I go in for that finish, like, as calm as I am, my mind is in the most chaotic, violent place that you could imagine as I'm trying to knock him out. I'm trying to put him out, you know? And as soon as the fight's over, you can look. Like, without even, like, thinking about it, I stop and I pull back. Like, there's, like, my last fight, twice I did it. I hit him with a hook and I stopped. I was hitting him with right hands, and as soon as he went down, I pulled the last punch. I did it against Kateg, too, when he was going down. I pulled a shot because, like, as violent as it is in that moment, and I'm trying to literally kill this man, as soon as I know the fight is over, my concern is for him. I'm like, okay, is he okay? Is he okay? Like, it goes from one extreme to the complete opposite. It's like, I'm telling you, like, it's madness, but this is how it is. And my first concern is always the opponent when it's over. Like, I'm actually worried about them, you know? Like, I'm like, are you okay? And I, like, some of them don't speak English, but you've, like, Reznicek, I remember I was helping him back, and I kept asking him, I was like, do you have a headache? Are you sick to your stomach? And he didn't know what I was saying, but I'm, like, worried that he might have a concussion, which he probably did, like, but, you know, and I'm, like, telling their corner, I'm like, get him electrolytes, like, get him checked, you know, like, make sure he's okay. And that's just, like, that's just the way it is.
I mean, I think that's terrific that you can have that kind of understanding, because I feel like people just don't understand that about, maybe don't understand that about you, or, like, on a surface level, because when they see, like, fighters like Jack Dempsey, like Sonny Liston, like Mike Tyson.
Yeah.
I mean, with Mike, the thing that I've loved about his career, even now, like, just doing public speaking and everything like that, is just showing a little bit of an insight into what it was really like when you're on top of the world back then in 86. And, you know, the fact that he was scared, and, you know, the fact that Teddy Atlas thinks that he, you know, Teddy Atlas goes out and speaks and says that Mike Tyson's still that kid that hides in between walls back in the day. And, like, I just love when fighters are open about everything, because I think it makes the sport more interesting to know, you know, where somebody comes from, what their mentality is, what they bring to the table, because the stakes get way higher too. Because once you start getting behind a fighter and understanding, you know, where they're coming from, you start to support them a lot more and what they're doing. And I think a lot of people, like, I've had a lot of interviews on this podcast where you were brought up. You know, I had Aubrey McLeod was actually my first guest. Then I had Stevie Bailey, Brandon Brewer, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, to be fair, in Canada for boxing, like, I think Ryan Rizicki is the biggest name right now.
Could be. I don't look at it like that, though. I still put, even, like, Brandon, for example. Like, when Brandon introduced me to the pros, like,
true,
like, to me, Brandon is here, you know, like, he's like, I'm still, like, watching him, and I'm, like, trying to do the things that he's doing, because he's a phenomenal fighter, like, let's be real, you know, he, like, and the heart the guy has, the freaking everything about him, like, to me, he'll always be here. Even if I become world champion in 5 years, and he becomes a freaking opponent for a guy, you know, to me, he's still here. Like, it doesn't matter where we're both at in our careers. Like, I don't see it that way, to be honest with you. Like, but, and, like, David Lemieux is another guy, you know, I put him up there, and, like, that, but that's just the way I am. Like, I've been humbled in life, like, and in the ring. Like, I've been humbled. Like, I've taken some lickings for sure, you know. Peralta, he handed it to me that night. That was a good humbling moment for me. There's been other fights, amateur fights, where I didn't stand a chance. I got blasted out a couple times. Like, street fights, I went against a few guys at one time thinking I was going to be Superman, and I just, next, you know, I'm on the ground getting my head stomped, and I'm like, oh, shit. Like, okay, I'm not as tough as I thought I was here, you know? It is what it is. So, yeah.
Okay, speaking of amateur fights, and I've always wondered this, Simone Keane, have you kept up with his career, and what do you think about a rematch? Like, he's a big guy. I can't believe you fought him back in the amateurs.
I'd fight him right now.
You would?
He come up to this window, knocked on it with a pair of boxing gloves. And no boxing gloves. I know I just said if a guy come up to the window, but if it was Simon Keen, that's a different story now. Because I like him. Like, if we talked, hey, we'd probably hug it out, you know? But, yeah, I'd love to get that back because I know.
He's got the mullet going on, eh?
He's crazy. He's a funny, actually a funny guy if you met him in person. But, yeah, he got me when I was training myself. I was training myself in the little baby barn. Like, I knew nothing about nothing. I was eating junk food and I didn't do road work. And I had no idea, understanding about, like, how to train properly. Like, I didn't have a full-time coach. And I just went there as, like, 195-pound super heavyweight. I had no business in the ring with him at the time. Even though he's a lot bigger now, I feel like if we fought now, I mean, anything can happen. He's a big guy with a little glove, you never know. But I feel like it would be a different kind of fight right now.
You're so throwback because I feel like a real throwback fighter, there isn't any weight divisions.
And... These guys today are to me, like, I'm like, I can't even have the conversation about the weight cuts and stuff. Like, I'm like, what are you doing? Why? Like, why? If Max Baer could do what he did against Primo Carnera, Joe Louis, Primo Carnera, Joe Louis, Buddy Baer. Like, if you look at the size difference between these guys, like, why are these guys worried about trying to get 30 pounds off to fight a guy smaller than them? Or, like, and then they're depleting themselves. Or, like, cruiserweights, like, I don't know. They're afraid to fight heavyweights. Like, that'll never be me. Like, I'd rather fight Anthony Joshua than fight Joe Smith Jr., to be honest with you. He's bigger and he's slower, and if he hits me with one punch, I'm just gonna wake up rather than taking a beating for 12 rounds.
Are you gonna be fighting this upcoming fight at cruiserweight or heavy?
No, this one's cruiserweight. So this fight is for the interim title or the silver, whatever they call it.
Okay.
It's for, so the winner will become mandatory to fight Badu Jack.
Does Jean-Jacques have right now still the European Union cruiser as well as the French Federation? Do you know if he still has those titles?
I don't know. Honestly, I don't know much about him. I do know about the European title, but, like,
yep.
I'm not, that's the thing. I don't really follow much about the titles and stuff. Like, I just know where I'm ranked in the WBC because I want that belt, particularly the bit of all the world titles. I just really want that one. It's like, I don't know. It seems to be the most important one.
Yeah, it definitely. My favorite color is the color of the belt. So it kind of appeals to me. And so I just wanted to kind of end things just looking at the card coming up June 10th. Of course, we just talked about your fight. But we got a returning Tyson Cave. And
you better show up.
He better show up. Oh, okay. You're on notice there, Tyson.
Tyson, he got it. Like, he's constantly, like, posting that he's going to fight and he doesn't fight. He's going to fight and he doesn't fight. Just show up and fight. The people love you there. He's an entertaining fighter. And what a matchup between him and Pedro.
Pedro, yes.
What a matchup. So I really just show up and fight, Tyson. Don't not fight. He might win too, right? So
yeah.
You never know.
Like when I think about Tyson and his style, that southpaw, like, just showman style, counterpuncher style, like, he's influenced a lot of the scene down here. I've felt,
100%.
Yeah. You know, a lot. I know I've trained with people. I haven't trained with Tyson directly, but I've trained with people that were under his tutelage and everything like that. And, you know, his style is just very interesting style. And I hope that this fight goes through. When I saw it was for the youth belt, I was like, what's going on here? But I know it just I saw him talking in the interview. I think it's up to 26 that you can fight for the youth title. So I think it's not on line with Pedro, but Pedro is the WBC youth champ.
Right. He's also got a CPBC belt, I believe, he won in his last fight. Yeah. But I don't know anything about anything about the titles, but I really hope Tyson just, he's training and he actually takes this serious and fights, because, you know, I got nothing bad to say about him. He's just, he's a great, great guy to have still, like, in boxing in Halifax, especially Halifax. Like, he's a big name there, you know, and he's an entertainer. That's the most important thing about him, is he entertains, and the, you know, like, I just hope he shows up to fight.
Yeah.
God damn it, Tyson, get your goddamn road work in and fight this guy.
Yeah, I think he's got a really interesting story going on with, you know, you got Daniel Beaupre coming with him, working with him, getting him into the gym and everything like that.
Yeah.
What's some other standouts from this card? Like you being the main event and everything. Like, what's some fights that you're really looking forward to underneath you?
You're gonna have to tell me the lineup, because I don't know.
Okay. You got Artur.
I know what you're talking about.
Ziatinov versus Francisco Ruiz.
Yeah, that's a guy that Three Lions has signed recently, I believe.
Okay.
From Russia. I don't know much about him, to be honest with you. Don't know much about him, but he looks good.
You got Kyle McNeil coming into Three Lions versus Dylan Rushton.
That's a good fight.
Yep.
That's an interest. That's going to be a firework fight, and that's going to go the distance.
Yep.
That'll go however many rounds it's scheduled for. Yeah.
I think he fought maybe 8 last fight. I'm not sure what the... Let me just check that real quick. So we got Kyle. Just see this bout. Scheduled for 8 at welter.
Yeah, that fight is definitely going to go the distance. I don't know who would win that fight. That's going to be a close fight.
Yeah. I know that his last fight didn't go his way, as far as, I think there was a clash of heads. Clash of heads that put that fight to a stop. Somebody I really like, Brett Beaton's going to be on the card.
Yeah, I like Brett.
Kyle Miller is his opponent.
Yep, oh, he's fighting that guy.
Yeah, he's fighting that guy.
I got Brett by knockout. I mean,
Brett by knockout? Okay.
Yep. Brett by knockout.
So, yeah, it's a great card there. Just finishing off, what does it mean? What does it mean to somebody from Cape Breton to be in Halifax?
Oh, it's big. Like, it's a big fight. It's honestly, to me, this fight is probably, personally, it's bigger than my world title fight against Rivas. It's bigger than the big fights I've had in Cape Breton. And reason is because the Halifax Forum has held some legendary fights, legendary fighters. Like, that's, you know, when you were from Cape Breton back in the day, like when Tyrone Gardner, Blair Richardson, you know, Rocky McDougal and all these guys were fighting, it was like a main goal of them was to get to the Halifax Forum to fight the big fights. You know, they would put on the big fights there, like the Canadian titles and stuff. They would have fights at the Glace Bay Forum, but like, going from Cape Breton to Halifax is like you're going into the big city. It's like the Madison Square Garden of Nova Scotia, you know? And just from being from Nova Scotia and being able to bring a fight of this magnitude there, like for Halifax, and it's just, to me, this is like Madison Square Garden, to be honest with you. I think it'd be bigger just because it's my home. It's you know, it's where I'm from, and like being a part of it, and then allowing the, and then like it's given opportunity to guys like Brett and Kyle and Tyson to fight on the undercard, and then they're going to get some big exposure from it too, and hopefully eventually, like, let's say Brett at one day, he'll be headlining the card, you know, at the Forum, because I'm not, you know, I don't care if I'm the main event or not. I just want to be there. I just want to be fighting. I just want, if I could be opening up the card, don't matter to me. So hopefully maybe the next one, some of the other guys can headline her, but at least I'm starting it for them, you know?
For sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just want to say, hey, Ryan, it was really, really great talking to you. Appreciate you coming on, and just wanted to wish you good luck with your fight coming up.
Yeah, thank you, man. I appreciate, too, everything you're doing, and, you know, giving all these these local fighters a chance to talk and share their stuff, you know?
Yeah, appreciate it. Thank you so much. Have a good day.
You too, bro.
And I hope you guys enjoyed this episode of the podcast. I really enjoyed having Ryan on. I know that quite a bit of the discussion that we talked about was mostly about stuff that existed outside of boxing, or the mentality of the stuff that you don't see. But in regards to his case, I think that's probably one of the most interesting things that you could talk to him about. And we really touched a whole lot of great things on this podcast. We talked about Ryan and his story, coming back from everything. You know, that's he's a throwback fighter. He's a fighter that really idolizes Jack Dempsey and the old style, the old way of boxing. And he's also somebody that's come back from a lot of things in his life, as well as his career. And certainly something that he always does, and I can respect and appreciate. And he said it himself, he's not the conventional role model for a lot of people, but what he wants to show people is that from people in a bad background, or have a history of getting in trouble like he had, that there is an outlet and there's a way to do all that stuff in a more ethical, sound way, if that makes sense. So I really appreciated having him on talking, and I really look forward to his fight June 10th. Of course, there's going to be a bunch of fighters from Halifax, from Dartmouth, from the Twin Cities fighting on this card, and possibly more interviews coming up with those people. Who knows? Guys, I have a lot of things in store and planned for this summer. I've really missed you guys. I hope you guys are seeing some improvement with my abilities, because I really feel like this year of taking the program that I've taken at school, it's really helped me improve in a lot of different aspects, maybe aspects that you can't see in the show, but certainly as a journalist. And I'm really excited for everything that I have in store. So without further ado, guys, if you're watching this episode for the first time and you're watching it on YouTube, make sure to subscribe to the channel. That way, when a new episode comes out, you don't miss it. You can also like, comment, as well as share the video. It always helps. Of course, if you're listening to the podcast on your preferred podcasting platform, you can subscribe to it there. And you can also give a rating to how well you liked the episode, whether you liked it or not. It always helps. So without further ado, guys, I hope whatever time you're listening to this episode, you're having a good day. And I look forward to bringing you another episode soon. So without further ado, have a good day.
Yo, the ring general, sweet science, deep like a mineral. You can see the hunger in my interviews. Peep the interlude, this is just a preview. Give you all I got, put the past in the rear view. My team ready, the theme steady. Got bad intentions like I seem petty. Still a good dude, stay humble, never messy, never crumble under pressure. I'm shining like God bless me.